Today on Shipment from Shiloh, David, Matt, and I give a special report on a recent game night kit. Then, in Freedom Through Equality, we discuss ideas on how to build a local Netrunner community. Finally, we play a round of Dece or Hack City. All this and more on Shipment from Shiloh. Good morning, good afternoon, good day, good evening. Hello and welcome to Shipment from Shiloh, a Netrunner community podcast. I am your host, Graham Carlson, and joining me today is my local game store squad. With me we have David.
Hello, hello.
And Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. We just finished up a game night kick, heretofore known as GNK. We had a great time. And I want to give a shout out to our local game store for hosting, which is
Fair Game in Downers Grove, Illinois. Very friendly local shop.
That's right, in the U.S. of A., North America. We had a great time tonight, and our first segment tonight is going to be a special report on how that game night kit went.
So can I ask?
Yeah, go.
Why are you shortening Game Night Kit to GNK when it's the same number of syllables?
You know, that's a fair question. And I think philosophers for many years have been trying to get to the bottom of that. And the answer is, it's faster to type.
It is faster to type. That is actually really good. That's a good point.
Yep.
And then you don't even have to know what it stands for anymore. You just read GNK and you're like, oh, gink.
Although for years, like, I would read GNK and I had no idea what it meant. I was just like, oh, a tournament with a gink tournament.
A
sounds
gink
exotic.
Tournament.
I want to go to one of those.
Is it really ganky? Like, is that like a jank, but
with a
gank?
However, to counter your excellent point, we are recording an audio podcast.
Therefore, GNK does not save any amount of time.
Not at all.
It's just a game night kit.
Spent more time describing what it was
than actually talking about it.
Okay. Now,
This was a small 4-person GNK, which there I go again, game night kit. So we did a round robin where we did 3 rounds and every player got to play everyone else. We had 4 guys tonight: Matt, myself, Graham, also Jack, and Jake the co-host on my panel for my second episode. So Matt, what did you play tonight and why?
So I'm just getting back into the game. It's been about 6 months since I've really played competitively. So I found a couple of decks on NetrunnerDB that sounded interesting. The first was an Andromeda deck. So my starting hand is 9 cards. And the goal of the deck is to get out the Aurevar and Snitch combo.
Gotcha.
And if you're not familiar with that, the idea is with Snitch, when you encounter a piece of ice, you can reveal it, and then you may decide to jack out. With Au Revoir, each time you jack out, you gain a credit. So the idea is if you get 3 of those out, plus your 1 Snitch, every time you encounter a piece of ice, you can gain 3 credits, mm-hmm. which is 1 click for 3 credits. That's really good.
Really, really good. I mean, that's like government takeover good. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah, and that card that everybody plays all the time, Government Takeover. but yeah, it's better than Magnum Opus. Like, Magnum Opus is a great economy card, and that's 2 clicks per credit. Strike that. Reverse it. 2 credits per click.
Right.
This
Much
is
better.
3. So it's great. Plus, you get to see the ice, and you know what breakers you need.
Right. I don't know. 2 clicks per credit is pretty good.
I would also buy that, yes. Now, the interesting thing is we had a brand new card just out in the last data pack, Earth Scion, mm-hmm. right? Called Rosetta 2.0. And what Rosetta 2.0 does is you can click and remove an installed program from the game, and then you search your stack for a non-virus program, shuffle your stack, then install that program, lowering the install cost by the cost of the program you just removed. So there's a fun little criminal card called Cache, which Noise has been using for years. You install it, you put 3 virus counters on it, and you can remove each of those virus counters for a credit each.
Right. So generally, you take the virus counters, aka the money, off of it immediately.
Right.
Normally, it just rewards you for having things that give you more virus counters, right? So, like, if you have a grimoire, or if you're using a cyberfeeder to install cash for free because of the cyberfeeder's recurring credit. So in Criminal, it's not very good, because both of those are Anarch cards, right?
Right. So in Criminal, usually you get 2 credits for it, and then it just kind of sits there, and you have to install over it, and that doesn't help you that much. But with the Rosetta 2.0, you put the cash out, you get your 2 credits, and then you remove the cash from the game and put in either an Icebreaker or part of your Orvar and Snitch combo.
Right.
So yeah, that basically gets your rig set up. That does take up a lot of memory, so I'm using the Cloudbreakers, Sunny's Cloudbreakers, Shriek and Shrike, what are their names?
Yeah, Shrike, Smash. Sherman.
The tank, Sherman. Yeah, the tank one, and the bird one, and the...
The Kogate one, yeah. Most people don't use.
Yeah, the...
Outside of Sunny.
Right, so Sherman and Shrike for barriers and sentries, respectively. And then... you get a lot of money, and then you can make runs mm-hmm. and hopefully win the game.
Yeah.
Didn't quite work out for me tonight, but came close.
So what was the issue with it? Was it a part of the combo that was just not fast enough, or...?
So the first game I played, I could not find any more memory.
Yeah.
So I had the full 4-card combo set up with the Orvar and Snitch, and that was using up all of my MU. Now, Andromeda starts with 1 link, so if you can get 1 more link out on the board, mm-hmm. then you can use the Cloudbreakers, because they don't take up any MU. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't find... I had total 4 cards of memory and or link, and I couldn't find any of those. They were all in like the bottom 15 cards of my deck. Mm-hmm. So I was never able to get any proper breakers out, and when you can't break ice, you can't really make runs.
Yeah.
So that sunk me a little bit.
Yeah. Now, what was your Corp deck that you brought?
Corp deck. So, another weird one. If you go to Netrunner DB, it is called the Butcher Shot deck. And the deck creator is... oh, I don't know how to pronounce that.
Mr. Edgeworth.
Great.
just knew it.
Just totally. Yeah, I mean, Edgeworth. That was my third grade teacher's
name. Yes, thank you, Mr. Azureworth, for building a very fun deck. And it is called the Butcher Shot Ice Cream Parlor.
Basically, it's an HB deck that does all kinds of damage, yeah?
That is correct. So it's running cards you wouldn't normally expect to see in HB, such as Punitive Counterstrike.
What?
Yeah. So whenever the runner steals an agenda, you can play Punitive Counter-Strike, there's a trace, and if you succeed, you deal meat damage equal to the number of agenda points printed on the card.
Right. So with the Global Food Initiative,
correct.
Even though you only stole 2 points, you can deal 3 meat damage.
That is correct. Another new card that's in here, I think it was in Terminal Directive, is Black Level Clearance, which is an upgrade. And whenever there's a successful run on the server... the runner has to take either 1 brain damage or jack out. And if they jack out, you trash Black Level Clearance, and then you gain 5 credits in a card. So it's win-win for you either way.
Yeah.
It's pretty nasty card.
Yeah.
Especially with a card called Friends in High Places.
Friends in High Places.
All right, so you're going to have to tell me what this one does, because people were saying that it was broken... and now I want to see what it does.
And now you want to know what it does, right? Yes. So Friends in High Places is a terminal operation, which means that you have to play it as your last click, costs you 2 credits, and it lets you take 2 cards out of your archives and install them immediately. Now, it doesn't sound too broken on paper, but really what's happening is you are multiplying how much recursion you have in your Corp deck, right? So... if you have upgrades that may or may not trash themselves, like Black Level Clearance, you trash them, then you play Friends in High Places, and you get to put them back. It's also really good if you run out of credits on your Adonis or Eve campaign, which that deck also runs. Then you can Friends them back into play. And then, let's say you've played 2 of your Friends in High Places, at least you're running out of them, right? Nope, because you can Jackson Howard them back into your deck and play them more. So it just lets you... You never run out of money or ice or whatever else you need to install.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, sounds good. Sounds fun. For me, if I'm playing the core.
Yes.
Not on the other hand of that.
It is fun. You know, sometimes you play against it, and it's kind of... It's frustrating. I think it's really frustrating if they're running a whole lot of assets that you want to be trashing, but then they put them back.
Yeah. And that's what I see, is it's sort of like you make that decision, and you're like, okay, I have to trash the Sedonis campaign. They're just going to get too much money off of it, and they're already economically ahead of me.
Right.
And so you spend a lot of resources getting through ice, trashing the asset, and you're like, okay, well, I did that turn, and the next turn they're just like, oh, click one, draw, click two, hedge fund, click three. Oh, yeah, Friends in High Places, and now it's back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can understand how that would be frustrating from the runner's perspective.
Right.
Yeah, so you can get those black level clearances back, and that's just nasty for the runner. So maybe they take a couple brain damages. That makes your punitives better. Mm-hmm. Now you need to do less meat damage in order to flatline them. And another way this deck can win and get a death, a flatline out of HP, which is weird, is with the core set card, Corporate Troubleshooter.
Corporate Troubleshooter? But I haven't seen that card in years!
Who has? Mr. Ellsworth
has.
Yeah, he sure has. and it's a lovely card. So it is an upgrade, so you just throw it in your server along with everything else. And the text reads, if you want to pull out your core sets, X credits and trash. Choose a piece of rezzed ice protecting the server. The ice has plus X strength until the end of the turn. So if you have more money than the runner, or maybe they're playing fixed strength icebreakers, as I encountered.
Jake.
Yeah. You play your Corporate Troubleshooter on something like a next gold.
A next gold?
You either lose all of your programs, or you take a lot of net damage.
Right.
And potentially flatlining.
Resolving the subroutines on a next gold is all I want to be doing in Netrunner all the time. If I could just do that every game, I would never stop playing.
Yeah, it's a pretty terrible card on its own, because it's 8 to res, and it's only 4 strength for a century, so it's fairly easily broken by most things.
It's probably for about 5 in a lot of cases, I think.
Right. So you really need something like that Corporate Troubleshooter or like a Marcus Batty, something that's going to assure that those subroutines fire. Because they can be really powerful, but most of the time, they're not going to fire.
Right.
There's also Edge of World in the deck, because...
Because brain damage is cool.
Everybody loves Edge of World.
Well, certainly wouldn't expect it.
Never got one to fire today. It was a little bit sad.
Yeah. So you're running the next ice suite in there, and then looks like Breaker Bay Grid to make your Adonis and Eve and other upgrades cheap. Yeah?
Oh, yeah. It works well with black level clearance, too, because that's a 4 to res card. So Breaker Bay, that's free. So
that's,
you can be getting
so
much profit with that card.
Yes!
Okay, black level clearance. Now, I know about the blue and the green one, but this is...
But the black level clearance. So that one costs 4. And that's the one where they have to take a brain damage or jack out and give you some
5 money credits and a card.
And a card.
Yeah.
Now, if it costs 4 to res, but you get 5 credits back, that's like a credit and a card, like whatever.
Yeah.
But with Breaker Bay Grid, now you're getting 5 credits and a card for a 2-card combo.
So this is never getting you... This is never getting you like a full, like, oh, my 3-point agenda is going to be protected, because you always take a brain damage unless it kills you.
Right. So it doesn't keep them out.
It doesn't keep them out, but it does make getting in a lot costlier.
Right.
Okay.
All right, so Matt, how did this one do?
So this one went 2-1 on the day, so went pretty well, I guess.
All right.
And the first round was a scored outs, mm-hmm. right, against you.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. And then second round, I was living the dream. So Jake was playing, remind me the name of that icebreaker.
He was playing Savant Kit.
Savant, yes.
So Savant is essentially a fixed strength breaker where he can get it up to like a high 5, 6, 7 strength, but didn't have anything else to really boost it above that.
Right. And it breaks both Sentry and Code Gates. So it's really solid.
Yeah.
And in our game, he had up to 7 strength, and he had taken, I think, 1 brain damage in the game and was holding 4 cards in hand during this run. So he ran my server, rezzed the first piece of ice, he got through it, and then I rezzed the next gold with the Corporate Troubleshooter, boosted it up to 8 strength,
wah, wah.
Which is fixed strength breaker. at 7, which you think you're safe with a 7th strength Century Breaker. Not anymore. it was the 4th piece of next ice rezzed, so it did 4 nut damage and flatlined him.
Yeah.
My other option was just to wipe out his entire rig, which would have also probably been devastating.
The net damage was almost a bit of a good thing at that point, because he didn't have to play out the rest of this game where he had to rebuild this entire
right.
It just ended it cleanly, and then
he had used both of his clone ships by that point, so it would have been just as demoralizing.
Yeah. And just to clarify, I think you said that he had 4 cards in his hand, but he would have had 3, and then you did 4 net damage, and that's what killed him.
Correct. Three cards in his hand when he started the run.
Yeah. So tonight I brought a Conspiracy Kim, meaning just the Eddie Kim good stuff Anarch, but instead of using Yogg and Mimic with Data Sucker, I used the Conspiracy Breakers. So I had Paperclip, MK Ultra, and Black Orchestra.
Those are the ones that come out of the heap.
That's right. So you can install them when you encounter an appropriate type of ice. So you can install the Barrier Breaker when you encounter a barrier, for example. And he's fine. You know, I kind of feel like he's kind of slow, but at the same time, I don't think I'm that good at Anarch. Like, I think I always feel really poor. I have a handful of stuff that I want to install. I have good economy cards in there. I will say that tonight it was annoying because I wanted to see Career Fair earlier, and instead I just didn't see the Career Fairs, which you use to install resources for cheap, and then I got piled up with Career Fairs at the end of the game after I had already installed all my resources. That happened, like, every game tonight. What the heck? Come on, Career Fair.
I feel you. When I have an Andy hand, I see no Career Fair. I mulligan, I still see no Career Fair. It's very sad.
And the pain!
And then, like, so turn when you get rid of your hand, you maybe don't have a lot of... You're like, all right, I guess I'll just install this daily cast for retail. And then, like, oh, turn 2. All right, draw. Oh, there's a Career Fair. Okay, well, now I've gotten all my pieces in. What does it run for economy, if I might ask?
Sure. So I have Career Fair, installing resources for cheap. I have Daily Cast, which is a resource that gives you money. I have Earthrise Hotel, which is a resource that gives you cards. It has Liberated Account, which is a resource that gives you money. And then I have Sure Gambles and Deuces Wild for money and draw.
And painful retail price for Liberated Accounts is just the worst feeling.
Yeah, it costs 6 to install, and it gives you a total of 10 credits. Like, you net 10 credits, right? So you pay 6 and you gain 16. But trying to get over that threshold of 6 is kind of a pain in the butt. So.
I believe a lot of games, the worst feeling in the world is, like, I'm going to have to take 3 turns off from this game to get this liberated out, and then just spend a couple turns clicking for credits. And after that, you're good. Like, it's a very good card for just sort of getting set up, but you really need Career Fairs or some other way to trick them out to make them an ongoing economy engine.
Right. So all of the breakers, excuse me, not all the breakers, but the Codegate and Century Breakers, MK Ultra and Black Orchestra, they are kind of expensive, and I was hoping to use the Data Suckers to maybe make them cheaper against high strength ice. I didn't run into a lot of high strength ice tonight. It was a lot of like gear check ice, single sub ice. So what ended up happening is I felt like I was paying 3 credits to break something that should only cost 1 or 2, and after a while that adds up. So now normally in this deck you're going to use Parasite with data sucker tokens to trash ice to make things cheaper, but that works sometimes in some games, but for the most part, like, for whatever reason, it was just hard for me to get the ball rolling, right? If they ice up the centrals, you need to make successful runs to get Data Sucker tokens. So if I don't have that, then the Parasite doesn't work as well, so I don't know. So the only spicy thing that's in this deck is the Console Obelisk, which lets you draw 1 card after a run on R&D or HQ for every card that you access during that run. Which, primarily, I have 1 copy of Nerve Agent and 2 copies of Medium, which are both multi-access tools. So once they get basically more than 1 counter on them, then you can start accessing 2 or 3 cards from R&D for Medium or HQ for Nerve Agent. Mm-hmm. And that worked really well. Also, Eddie Kim loves multi-access because it means that he's more likely to hit an operation. Eddie Kim lets you trash an operation once per turn. So that's cool.
And then how long has that server, or how long has that console been out?
I think it came out in, I'm going to say, Escalation, which was the third data pack of the Flashpoint cycle, so October of 2016. Which is 7 months ago.
Really impressive.
That is very impressive.
Nailed it.
And how long has it been, how has it been doing sort of in the meta? Has it been a big card? Because I know it was in the recent release, the World Champ decks came out, and I thought I saw one in there, or one or two in there.
Yeah, I think he ran Obelisk. So I think it was popular around Worlds last year, A, because it's new, B, because it works well with, if you can draw cards and then use those cards for things. So, like, if you're running Faust as your primary breaker, where you can trash cards from your grip to get in, so you could do stuff like, make a run on R&D. You spend some of your resources getting in, but then you get to draw three cards because you've already built up these medium tokens, then you can use it to run in again, right? So it, like, kind of fuels your runs.
Yep.
But thirdly, it was popular because... it was a tag storm meta, so getting buried in lots of tags, using hard-hitting news to deal four tags at a time, controlling the message gives you, or traces to give you a tag every time that you trash something on the table, so it was very easy to get buried in tags at the time. Obelisk has a side ability that says your hand size increases for every tag that you have.
Okay. Ooh,
nice. So if you are going to play against decks that ran Boom, for example, which does 7 meat damage if they have 2 tags, you can have 2 tags, boost your tag size, hand size up to 7, and now all of a sudden Boom doesn't kill you.
Yeah.
Which seems like Boom should kill you, but not in this case.
But not in this case. It just wipes out 7 cards from your hand, which kind of sucks, but whatever. Your Anarchs, you can get them back. If they trash your breakers, you can always run, and when you encounter ice, you get to install your breakers. So that's cool. So in this deck, I don't run Faust, so Obelisk is just kind of part of the engine to help me draw. And for that, I think it's fine. I think just multi-axis is good, which makes medium and Nerve Agent good. Eddie Kim likes medium and Nerve Agent. Obelisk likes medium and Nerve Agent. So all of that works, but I don't feel like the deck is super fast. I don't feel like it's super strong. The games that I won with it tonight, I felt like I was just making good decisions as opposed to the deck actually doing a lot of work for me.
Yeah, I think in our game, I was able to set up a server, remote server, that you were not able to get through. You just weren't seeing the pieces.
Yeah.
So you were able to, like, knock down my centrals pretty well. You were, you know, trashing my next dice with your parasites and dig suckers and all that. So you had some pretty deep medium digs on R&D.
Yeah.
And you got to see my whole hand at one point at HQ. But I was able just to keep chucking remotes into that, or keep chucking agendas into that remote server, and you weren't able to get in.
Right. So. And I think with an Ice Destruction deck, like when Dumblefork was really big, which was exclusively an Ice Destruction deck, it's at its strongest when you can threaten the remote so that they don't have places to go, right? You're going to run the remote to get them to res the ice, then you can parasite it and get rid of the ice. And I didn't feel like this deck was strong enough, fast enough, or rich enough to do that.
Right.
Which just meant I was only able to focus on centrals and just hope that I could win the race to get points before they were able to jam stuff in the remote and score out. So, kind of disappointed. I'm going to keep working with it because I really like Eddie Kim. I've run similar decks out of, like, Null, which just gives you a way to lower the strength of ice. And so that works well with Parasite and other things that you'd use Data Sucker with anyway. If I keep practicing, I think I'll get better at it. Because I think there are good builds out there. I just don't know what they are. I might have to drop all my influence and put in, like, Temujin Contract to get enough money to start the engine up, but we'll see.
You did go 2-1, so, like, let's not...
That's not terrible. That's not terrible. I just wasn't that impressed with the deck.
Yep.
And then on the Corp side, I ran my Time Suck Cider deck, which in episode 1 of this podcast series, Ross and I built the Time Suck deck, which was out of the Core HBID, Engineering the Future. So I took basically the same deck, put it in Cider, whose ability reads, the first time each turn the runner loses or spends a click during a run, you can add a card from Archives to the top of R&D. So there's kind of built-in Corp recursion. Here's the thing about this ID. It never fires. Like, unless it really behooves the runner to get your ice rezzed, it's never going to fire. But it does make your Eli's hard end the runs all of a sudden, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it does make it so they can't afford to run and just see if it's an Ichi to click through it, because then I'll get back key pieces.
Oh, for sure. And there are multiple circumstances where I normally would just click through the Eli or something to access, yep. but it would be pointless because you would just put operations on the top of R&D, things that I couldn't access. So
right.
yep. even though it didn't fire, it still was in effect.
Yep. Right, right. Now, is it worth it over the probably 10 to 15 credits I would have made in every game? I'm not totally convinced. I will say that it slowed people down, which meant that I had a chance to set up, which means that I could put in the Mason Bellamy Strongbox combo that was the mm-hmm. the core defensive upgrade combo from my Time Suck deck. And Mason Bellamy just synergizes with the ID as well. So it was undefeated tonight, which I feel really good about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that just having really beefy mid-size ice to slow people down was probably the strongest part of it. So I'm happy with that. I kept the restructures in, even though it's not core ETF, because the chances of me being able to get a sweep sweep or a hedge fund in my opening hand and then click for a credit, it happened every time tonight. It happened in all my games. Mm-hmm. So restructure was still effective in it, even though I wasn't core ETF. Yeah, so the other guys tonight, we mentioned Jake brought his Savant kit deck, which I beat, and you said you beat it.
Right, flatline.
flatline. And I think, his kit lost against Jack as well. So okay. Kit was not doing very good tonight. Kit is a cool ID when you read it because she changes an ice to code gate every turn, but between the ways that you can play around it and still just being able to tax her out unless she's on a stealth suite, I think kind mm-hmm. of trips mm-hmm. her up.
She also has very limited influence, so that brings, yeah. her, that brings her down just like, because is it 10 or 12?
It's 10.
Only it's 10. 10. Yeah, yeah, that's a pretty bad versatility punch that she takes. Now, yeah. as more cards come out for the game, mm-hmm. she slowly gets better because then you have more in-faction options for things.
Right.
But I feel like even after all of this time, because she came out in Creation Control,
yeah.
I feel like even after all this time, she still hasn't quite overcome that.
Not and, quite there yet.
Yeah, that ability is just not as strong as we'd want it.
So he was running Savant as his code gate and Sentry Breaker, but he also ran a Yogg for all the low strength stuff. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like it's hard to run two fixed strength breakers, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think if you have the Savants, I think you can pay the two credits to break.
That's good.
You don't need to pay the five to put out the Yogg necessarily.
Right.
And that's just more of a tempo hit. And I think that was his biggest issue, was getting everything down and strengthened up in time in order to
yeah.
make successful runs.
Yeah. So his other deck that he brought was an Estelle Moon Potential Unleashed Jinteki deck. Potential Unleashed makes your net damage twice as good, because when you take any amount of net damage from anything, then you get to trash the top card of the runner's stack. So that's damage based on the source. If you do a Junebug, like a Junebug will do 4 or 6 net damage in a clump, so then you'd still just trash one card. But if you run ice like he did, which was Koma Inu and Aiki, where you have mm-hmm. multiple subs that say do 1 net damage, then you also get to trash that many cards because each sub is a separate source.
Yep.
And so he was trying to set up a situation with Bioethics Association, where you get to deal 1 damage at the start of the corpse turn, and that's an asset. And so then you run Hostile Infrastructure, where every time they trash installed cards, then they take a net damage. So they trash the Bioethics, they take a net, dish the top card of their stack. You've res the Bioethics, so you deal net damage, drop the top card of their stack.
Yeah.
So he was trying to set up kind of a bio lock with that and Genetics Pavilion. But I think he only won one game against you tonight, Matt.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah, that was a kind of an unlucky access. I mean, it's my fault. I was dumb and decided to multi-access against Jinteki, which is never a great
player. Dangerous. A dangerous game.
But I was like, oh, I have 5 cards in hand. I'll run R&D, I'll use 6 counters from Terrain Wheel and access 3 cards. I was accessing 3 cards.
Yeah.
So thought it wouldn't be that bad. First card, of course, was a snare.
It's always a snare.
Yep.
It's always a snare.
It's always a snare. And then the next one was an operation, I think. And then the final card was a chrysalis. Is that the correct?
Yeah, ice? Chrysalis is the ice that you can encounter if you access it.
Yep. Yeah, so you, I have to reveal it. And it's a sentry piece of ice. I didn't have a sentry breaker out at the time. And its one subroutine is do 2 net damage. So I went down to no cards. I drew a card for my last click, thinking maybe I'll be safe. And then at the start of his turn, Jake was able to res 2 bioethics to do 2 net damage and flatline me.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And, you know, I've heard people complain about bioethics. In that context, I actually think it's really interesting because you're trying to set up a kill turn, right? Mm-hmm. Where either you grind them down with the bioethics hostile infrastructure, or if that doesn't stick, then you're just trying to get enough net damage in a single turn to threaten them. But
also, Friends in High Places does wonderful work in that deck, too, because you go to trash the hostile infrastructure, you go to trash the bioethics,
yeah.
And then the next turn, he's putting them right back with Friends in High Places.
Funny, you know, I used Friends in High Places in my deck, too, to get back my upgrade combo.
It's almost like this card is very versatile and very, very good.
Because it's one influence?
It's only one influence, okay. Baby.
That is...
But you know who didn't use Friends in High Places? Jack. So he... He was on Uncorrodable Scorpios, which means you're trying to... He only has barriers in his deck. They all end the run. And he's in Scorpios, which lets you remove a card from the game if it gets trashed. Mm-hmm. So he's just trying to do everything in his power to trash barrier breakers, remove them from the game, and lock them out. And I don't think he had a ton of success tonight. He did beat you, though, Matt, right?
We're just coming back to me for all these so-and-so hey, beat me stories.
He did beat you, so how did he do that?
He must have won 2 of his games because he won 4 games tonight. So anyway, keep going.
Okay. So now this I think was a result of me not playing for a long time and forgetting which cards were in the game. So the combo he had set up, I had my barrier breaker down, and he played a card that I'm not going to remember the name of it.
Hatchet Job.
Okay.
It's a double trace. If the trace is successful, he bounces a card from the table to the runner's hand.
Okay.
So he bounced my barrier breaker back up, and I was like, okay, well, this is annoying, but I'm going to let him do it because I'll just install it again on my next turn. I did have the money to pay the trace, but I was like, okay, this will be cheaper just to reinstall it, so this is fine. But then I forgot about one other card.
Salem's Hospitality.
Oh, okay.
Which lets the court player name a card, and then the runner reveals his or her hand and has to trash the named card.
Right.
As many copies as they have.
And because he's playing Scorpios, he gets it removed from the game.
Right.
So. Correct. So he had already removed from the game my other barrier breaker. I think he did a snatch and grab after I stole an agenda. So that was my second and only barrier breaker, and I was playing criminal. So well, they're both removed from the game, so there's nothing I could do, even though I was playing recursion, which I, of course, was not. So, that was the end of that one.
Yeah. So when I played him, this is one of my favorite moments of the night. I ran in and stole an Oaktown out of his remote, and then I had an employee strike in hand, so I played that, which then means that even though he could play something like Hunter Seeker, you just stole an agenda, so he gets to trash a card. He doesn't get to remove it from the game.
Okay.
And my barrier breaker was Paperclip, which installs itself from the heap anyway. So it's like a minimal tempo hit for him to play Hunter Seeker on my Paperclip. So then he's just... So I kind of turned off his ability to do that.
Yeah.
He couldn't find his Hatchet Job combo, and I was able to multi-access enough where I could trash the Hatchet Jobs because it does have a trash cost on there of 0.
Yep. Also, you were Edward Kim.
Also, I was Edward Kim. So any way you cut it, the operation's going down. And so all of his ice is just gear check. It's wraparounds. It's self-adapting code wall or whatever that
vanilla.
Is.
Vanilla.
Vanilla.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, even if I couldn't parasite his ice, I could still... I mean, I could just put out Paperclip and break everything for 1 or 2 credits, and he wasn't able to get ahead of me in that way.
It's,
so.
It's gear check ice until it gums up your gears, and all of a sudden you're like, I can't break an ice wall anymore. This is terrible.
Right. So Matt, what were some of your favorite moments from tonight?
Really just the corporate troubleshooter dream was so alive. It's, you know, it's basically the Netrunner equivalent of, you know, Jordan jumping up in the air and getting the, like, 4 seconds of hang time and dunking over somebody. That's pretty much the nerdy network equivalent of that. So
right.
that was probably my favorite moment.
I think just the success that this HP deck had that I built with Ross kind of on the fly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy with how it performed. And it's just got generally good cards in it. So there wasn't a specific moment. It was, oh, I'll tell you what. I didn't talk about what Jack's runner was. I'm just going to call it Dark Side Wizard. Because it uses AI breakers, specifically Eater.
Ooh.
Which is a really good AI breaker, but it doesn't let you access cards if you use it to break. Which seems like that's dumb, right?
Yeah.
But what if you're running Account Siphon?
Yes.
Then it's good, because Account Siphon, you don't access cards anyway.
Yeah, so tell me, was he running Account Siphon?
He was running Account Siphon. Oh my goodness.
It's almost like you thought of that beforehand.
Right. You know what else works with successful runs that you don't need to access cards for? Apocalypse.
Yes.
He ran Apocalypse, and he ran Keyhole, which you also don't need to access cards for. Yep. So, in our game, he actually played his Apocalypse probably too soon. You know, I jammed something in my remote, so he's like, all right, Apocalypse time, I can break everything. So bam, 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 breaks it all. But on his R&D run, I got to res an Architect. An Architect says you cannot trash it if this card is installed.
Yes. Yep.
And rest. So I got to res it during that run, which then meant that he couldn't make his free Keyhole runs. He had to spend 3 credits every turn with MK Ultra to break through it. So that slowed him down enough for me to build back up. And eventually I got back to a Glacier status of 2 ice on every server. And
got it. Yeah, Apocalypse can be, I think, one of the worst like Netrunner moments I've had as far as just gameplay perspective is when I Apocalypse somebody and I just watch their face be like, oh, I just can't do anything. Like, the game is over. I still have to play it. Again, like we were talking before, I still have to play the rest of this game.
Right.
But I can't do anything about this. But, But that sounds actually evil. I see where the dark side comes from.
Right. It's just all evil things, right? Yeah. I think he had a lot of success with that tonight as well. But for our game, it was kind of a momentum shift, right?
Okay.
Now, I will say that I did include one card in my deck besides the Architect that really helped me come back from that Apocalypse.
Oh, was that Friends?
It was Friends of High Places. So I got to install my Ravana's back on, and then I fired a sneaky ABT, which he was not able to counter. The Accelerated Beta Test, when you score it, you can reveal the top cards of your deck. If they're ice, you install and res them. If they're not ice, you trash them. And so one of the best feelings in Netrunner is, well, one of the worst feelings is when you fire the ABT, because you can choose to do it, and that you pull up, and they're like 2 or 3 agendas, and they go into archives, and you don't get to install any ice, and then the runner gets them.
Don't have a Jackson Howard down.
And you don't have a Jackson Howard down, so you can't get them out of archives.
I am so glad that Friends in High Places has such a high influence cost that you can't just run it in any deck.
Right. Yeah. I fired 2 accelerated beta tests in that game.
That is.
One of them, I got a Ravana and a Fairchild, so I put the Fairchild in archives, so he couldn't
Gross.
Yeah, right? Yes. Because my score remote was already that awesome. No, it was not. But I got to put Ravana on like HQ, so all of a sudden the Ravana's turned on because of the Fairchild. Because Ravana, you need to use other Bioroid ice that's rezzed, and then it gets those subroutines.
Yes, okay.
But then I fired another ABT that game, and it was just, you know, worse for wear for him, because I got to fire it again. Another Fairchild 3 goes on R&D, and a toll booth goes on my scoring remote.
Stop.
What? I fired 2 ABTs and they both stuck. That was awesome.
Yes. Yes, getting a toll booth out of an ABT is something that people have been doing since the core set.
And it's so good.
It is.
It's never gotten old.
Still feels good. Still feels good.
Just, yep, that you flash that gold and it's just a beautiful thing.
Right. Well, thank you very much for the special report, guys. Okay. Our next segment, we will discuss building a local meta in a segment we call Freedom Through Equality. All right, welcome to Freedom Through Equality. Building a local meta is the topic of discussion for today. Dave, I think you have some points.
Yes,
you were kind of the organizer.
I did have some points. So building a local community has been important to me for a while. We once had a strong Netrunner community, and we're looking to bring it back now. So finding different strategies and ways to support the local community and where those strengths are super important. I like to think back a lot to the first day that I walked into Fair Game, because I had actually started with Netrunner and board gaming. Netrunner was one of the very first games I tried out.
Hmm.
And I walked in, and I was super scared, actually, because this is the first time that I'd done a meetup, and I knew nobody here.
Right.
And I walked in, like, is there a Netrunner meetup here? And the manager at the time there, Eric, was like, yeah. I was like, okay. And he's like, let me introduce you to everybody, which just that was wonderful.
Yeah.
And then I sat down and I had, I remember it was an NBN Near Earth Hub deck. And mm-hmm. that was the ID where you install a card and you get to draw a card.
Right.
Is it still good? Is it still in the meta?
So it's less good because you don't have the Astro Train anymore. Okay. So, but I still think it's good because of all the good assets that are out there. Yes. So it's less popular, but still good.
And card advantage is super important.
Super important.
Yep. So it was Near Earth Hub, and this is back when Near Earth Hub was popular. I was running a Junebug variant, which don't do that.
Stupid.
I was also running a Professor deck, and I had this wild scheme of how the Professor was going to work. So two not very good decks because I just hadn't played in a local meta. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what an NAPD contract was, and this was before the NWL, so everybody was running it in all their decks. And I sat down with this player. And he just crushed me both games. He did not take it easy at all. He knew I was new, and he's like, I'm just going to crush you. And at the end of the game, he started talking to me about what would make my deck better. And one of the things he said is buying a second core set. You just get so many other good cards that you need to include in your deck. And I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then he stood up, went to the counter, bought a second core set, and he's like, here you go. Come back next week, and let's see what you've built. And that was just, that was what got me started with it.
So he bought it for you.
He bought it for me. He's like, here you go. This is yours now.
Wow.
Now, I'm not saying that you have to do that.
Every new player, buy their second course.
Every new player, buy them all of the stuff that they need, and they'll be your friends for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But just having someone invested in your performance so important. Is you can show up to a game and lose, and you have to own those losses.
Right.
But having someone else own your losses and your victories gets mm-hmm. you coming back to the game. It's those discussions you have after the GNK where you go,
right.
Hey, how did you do? I did this. I feel like I want to try this in a deck.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can brew together, and oh, what about this card? And having those discussions and finding out that people are really invested in making your decks work and making your play better,
right.
just from a perspective of building the community, is, I feel, a good place to start.
We got to do that about a month ago, where there was a new player who had like 3 data packs and a core set, and he put together some decks on his own, and they were probably fine for his card pool, mm-hmm. But he'd only been playing Kitchen Table Netrunner. And we sit down for this GNK, and I tell him, like, okay, well, we only have an hour to do our 2 games. And he was like, oh, okay. But don't worry. Just take your time, right? So I was really patient with him, for one. Mm-hmm. And then as we're playing through the game, then he scores out a Project Vitruvius from his NBN deck. And I say, okay, well, Project Vitruvius is an HB agenda, and technically you can't include agendas from other factions into this deck.
Yes.
But don't worry. We'll just treat it as a blank 3-2. So it's not like I disqualified him. It's not like I made a big stink about it.
Yeah.
I just said, okay, well, before you play your other games tonight, let's fix this real quick, right?
Yeah.
So we fixed it, and then after the GNK, a bunch of people had gathered around, and there was like 3 people who were all just like giving him suggestions, things he could do,
mm-hmm.
ways that he could find better card synergies or focus his deck more. He had a great time.
Yeah.
Even though I don't think he won very many of his games.
Yeah.
But man, he had a blast, and he came back the next week, right?
Yeah, and he also came back the next day, and he like brought this deck to me, and he was like, hey, how's this deck doing? And I was like, oh, okay, here, let's try it out and play a game.
Yeah.
So nice. he was very excited after that tournament to start playing some more, and he said he was going to make it. Well, he said he wasn't able to make it tonight, but he wanted to come.
Right.
And sort of that is what really helps grow the community. We've experienced, mixed success with it. Netrunner is a very hard game to grow because it's very hard to find a new player base for it. Sure. You have to go up to someone and be like, listen, how many data packs do you want to buy now, today, to build a competitive deck?
Right.
It tends to be a lot of an asset from a financial aspect,
yeah.
as well as I just need to get acclimatized to this whole new environment with all of these different cards.
Well, that's just it, right? Because not only do you have the upfront cost of buying the cards, which, granted, is cheaper than a collectible card game with rarities,
yeah.
but still, if you want to build a competitive deck, you're probably going to need to buy a third of the data packs that are out, a third of the released cards. Then there's the upfront cost of learning how to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And learning all the intricacies of the rules because it's complicated. Yep. And then there's the third cost of learning the card pool and not only knowing all the cards that are in your deck, but the cards that your opponents might have as well.
Yep. Yeah, and so it's very hard to get new players invested in the game. And then experienced players, as much as you try to invite them to come back and try to create that environment where it's like, oh, I could start playing Netrunner again, sometimes you're just not going to be able to get them. There are a lot of players that used to play Netrunner here that just have given up the game, and either they had a bad experience with it or they've just moved on to other things, and it's hard to get them to come back.
Right.
So it's kind of a hard environment, but still doing things like making the new players feel welcome, and also including more diversity, which is something that, again, you don't see here around ton, but around here a ton. But providing that environment where different players of different types, namely women, can come and play is also very important.
Right, right.
I think the horrible thing that I used to do that I still feel bad about is I remember going to a tournament at a different store, and a girl walks in to play Netrunner, and it was the very first girl I had ever seen, or woman, playing Netrunner, and I immediately exclaimed very loudly, I stopped the game I'm playing, loudly enough for the whole room to hear. I'm like, oh my god, it's a girl, I've never seen a girl playing Netrunner before, that's awesome. And I still feel bad about it because anyone walking into any make her that thing that she might be a little self-conscious about, just make her feel it and make sure everyone else in the room knows it. And I still wish I could apologize to her. It's just something that I hadn't thought about. That doesn't excuse it, but it's something that I need to think about, and it's different ways to make people feel, again, like they have a space that they can that this is also their space that they belong here.
Right. Well, you live and you learn, right?
Yep.
So, and that's okay.
Well, then a couple of months later, this other thing happened, but...
So
the next question I have is, what do you guys think are things we could do as a community to build out a player base and get more people invested in the game? And what are we doing well? What are we...
Well, so you mentioned, you know, it's tough for new players to get in. You know, it's a big buy-in if you want to try to get everything at once.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a good strategy is if you're joining the game with somebody else, if you and somebody else are both brand new players, and it could be a friend that you know, a spouse, it could be, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, or just somebody else from the community. You know, if we can get two new players in on the same night, and then they can kind of start building their own meta together. And they don't have to buy everything all at once. They can, you know, buy a pack a week or whatever they're comfortable with.
Right.
And they can still stay really competitive and equal with each other, and then still have fun games with everybody else as well. Bless you.
Thank you.
And I think that could be a good way to sort of ease the buy-in cost and not make you feel like you have to get everything all at once if you have somebody you can work your way up with.
And I do, again, remember back in the day, there was this group of three guys that came in, and they all joined Netrunner together, and the cool thing is they actually bought the data packs and then shared them amongst each other. Like, oh, you need this NBN ID, here, I have three of them. Oh, you need this one card, like, okay, I'm not using it right now, you can borrow it. So they had this sort of conglomerate collection, and they were able to share amongst themselves.
Right.
And I actually remember being jealous of them sitting down and playing at tournaments, because for them this was a whole new experience. Those first couple weeks when you're playing Netrunner and you're sitting down, I mean, like, I don't know what that could be. It could be anything. What's that piece of ice?
Right.
I guess I'm just running last click. That is an experience that you never get back. I mean, Netrunner is still a great game by all means. The brewing, the gameplay, the nuances of each click. But you never quite get back those first couple days of like, oh my god, this is such a crazy game.
Right. So I was a fundraiser for several years, and when I was talking to donors and trying to get them to donate to my college, the university that I worked at, we kind of had a saying where you can. It's a lot easier to maintain an existing donor than it is to get a new donor, and I think that also applies to Netrunner. In some respects, I think it's easier to get someone to come out to a game night kit who already owns maybe half the cards or three quarters of the cards and then gave up or decided to get out of the game a little bit, or, you know, they were tired of it at the time, you know, they didn't have as much excitement for it anymore. I think it's easier to get someone like that to come than it is to get someone who's totally new to the game, who's never played it before, and try to teach them how to play, just in terms of trying to get attendance at events and things. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, I don't really know necessarily why people would have gotten out of the game if you've already invested that much into it. So I kind of have trouble putting myself in their shoes. So I don't know if it's actually easier to get someone who already owns a lot of the cards to come back.
So actually, I can answer that quite specifically, because I have been out of the game for a while. I got in when Honor and Profit came out, so that was a Criminal Jinteki box, mm-hmm. which is terrible because my brother, who I played mostly with, played all Criminal and all Jinteki, and he had the biggest card pool to pull from. and then Creation and Control came out, and I just stomped him. But, Creation and Control, we got Creation and Control. Right, so for us, right. we moved into different pattern. So I got into Honor Profit, and it was Data and Destiny that is really when I stepped out of the game.
Right.
And it was just because, for me, I had done a little bit of the competitive scene. I had delved into spending a lot of my time with Netrunner and spending a lot of money on Netrunner.
Yeah.
And it just got to be too stressful. And I remember it was a A&R Pro Circuit A&R tournament,
Pro Circuit, yeah.
Where I had qualified for the finals of whatever it was earlier, and I showed up to the day one just to have fun playing some fun decks in the tournament, and then I was thinking about showing up to day two, and I'm like, actually, I don't want to go. I don't want to play in these competitive events anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not that Netrunner isn't fun; it's that the stress I feel when I'm doing in the tournament, and I know I can perform well.
Right.
That caused me to sort of be like, I don't want to play Netrunner anymore. I've invested so much, and how much more I'm going to invest in this game that I'm not enjoying anymore.
Interesting.
That being said, a couple months after that, I regrettably sold my collection, which
sure.
is something that I regret that I did, but I did it, and I feel very happy that I did it because the people that received it really appreciated it because they don't normally have access to it. But I sold my collection, and then a couple of months after that, I had these two janky decks, and actually Matt and I went up to in the city in Chicago. They actually have a casual Wednesday night where they meet up at this bar, Emporium.
Arcade bar.
Yeah, arcade bar. And they actually play Netrunner there. Mm-hmm. And it's very casual. You bring jank decks,
right.
and you just drink, and then you play Netrunner. And I remember sitting there playing Netrunner in the bar and being like, oh yeah, this is what I got into this game for.
Right.
I remember this now. Like, I needed to take a step back out of the meta, and then take a step back in and remember, oh yeah, I came in here to build jank decks and
right.
Do crazy things and maybe win and maybe lose and not really care about my record at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So clearly the solution is just to serve beer at the game store.
Yes. And we can't, so... but yeah, so it was... And it's about cultivating not only a competitive community with tournaments, but also a casual community with people who are just here to have fun. And it's something that we try to do with all of our games in the store, is not to be too competitive, at the same time not to be too casual.
Right.
And it's finding that good balance between the two that really makes a community thrive. And hopefully
right.
we'll be able to reach that and get people coming back in the dozens or
right.
half dozens.
Or whatever.
Or whatever.
So the last thing that I will say about it is I know that there are people out there who play Netrunner at home, play it with friends, but they're kind of intimidated by the idea of going to play mm-hmm. with strangers at a store, kind of like what you were saying at the beginning
yes.
of this segment, right, Dave?
Yep.
So I just want any listeners out there who maybe feel like they really enjoy Netrunner, which is why you're listening to a podcast about it,
yes.
but maybe you're kind of intimidated to go to the local game store. Don't be intimidated. This is the most friendly gaming community in the entire world. So if there was ever a game that you could play with other people that you didn't know and still have a good time, this was it.
Yes.
Netrunner is that game.
Which one more anecdote on the end of that is
yeah.
at that tournament for A&R Pro Circuit, there were a couple people driving up from, I think it was Kentucky or Tennessee, don't quite remember, for the event. And they needed places to stay, and I felt like it was completely okay to be like, oh yeah, you can stay at my place, not knowing these people all that well, but knowing mm-hmm. that they were Netrunner players.
Yeah.
I feel very, it's a good environment, and they're good players, And the cool thing is that when I didn't show up to that day two, they were actually the ones that texted me first that were like, are you okay? Like, is everything all right? And it was like, oh, yeah, okay. No, guys, I'm all right. I just didn't want to show up today. So and even the fact that they, who I didn't know all that well, were right. concerned about my well-being, I thought just spoke to how welcome this community is and another reason why you should stay in this game.
Alrighty, I got a game for you guys. Are you excited?
I am. I'm pumped.
Tonight's game is called Dece or Hack City. Dece as in decent, Hack City as in Hack City.
Okay, yep.
Right.
Got it.
So in this game, I'm going to list off unorthodox or possibly jank two-card combos. And you guys tell me if you think the combo is good, a.k.a. Dece or decent, or bad, which is Hack City.
Okay, right.
So what do we get if we win?
Well, here's the thing. The analysis in this game is totally subjective, and so the whole point is just to debate.
And also, what we get if we win is the either A, we get a bunch of combos that we can now put in our decks that make us better than everybody else, or B, we get to avoid these combos and not have to build those decks and spend our time building good things instead.
That's right.
I feel like it's good for you.
So the added knowledge is the reward, right?
Yes.
Now, okay. I will guarantee those listeners out there, some of you will hear some of these combos and you're like, I have to go build this deck right now. I guarantee it.
Going to build all of these decks.
Right, we'll build this, all of these.
Sure. They will all go in the same deck. Oh, I can't. I don't know, I think I can do it. All right, I'm okay.
So tonight's theme for Decent Hack City is tags. All right. So all these cards have something loosely to do with tags, right?
Okay.
So our first combo tonight, I actually brought up in my episode one podcast. It's using Sherlock 2 in sync.
Okay.
So Sherlock 2 is a Bioroid Ice. It's a 2.0 Bioroid, so you can spend two clicks to break up to two subroutines, and the subroutines are traced to add an installed card to the bottom of the runner's stack, traced to add an installed card to the bottom of the runner's stack, give the runner a tag.
Okay.
Sync is an ID where tags cost three to get rid of instead of two. So, click through the install berry subs, sticking with the tag. It's like a big tempo hit. They weren't expecting it in sync.
Okay.
It's three influence.
I do have to say, sometimes I will run Sherlock, either 1.0 or 2.0, in my deck instead of Ichi, which Ichi is the correct decision in most of those cases.
That's true.
But I will run the Sherlock just so the opponent has to look across the table and ask me to read the card. That is a very satisfying moment. So I feel like that's pretty decent. I when your opponent has to read the card and then realize what you've done.
Right. They run third click in sync, right? Because as long as you get to clear the tag at the end of the run, right?
Yeah.
But then you stick them with the berry, the tags, the stuff, the subs.
Yeah.
Words.
Yep.
Those were all things that you said, yes.
They may have been words. I'm not sure. Considering that it's NBN, and NBN doesn't have to pay for Jackson Howard influence, so they have like three extra influence to begin with.
Right.
I think it's Dece.
So our assessment is Dece for Sherlock 2 in sync. Second combo, breaking news, 2-for-1. Give the runner two tags. At the end of the turn, you have to get rid of the tags. So breaking news plus bad times, which is a four-cost operation. Play only if the runner's tagged. The runner's memory is reduced by two until the end of the turn. So the idea is you do this when their rig is full and they have to trash two MU worth of programs.
Okay, but they get to make the decision.
They have to. It's not trash two programs. It's...
So they still get the choice.
They still get the choice.
Weird Punisher effect. Now, I do feel, to give this merit, breaking news plus bad times sounds like the last 6 months of news in the world.
American news is breaking news, bad times. That's what's been going on in America the past 6 months.
So Hack City is my judgment.
Based on that assessment alone.
Yes.
Hack City will also be my
I think it's Hack City too, because they get to choose. What if they have an SMC installed? What if you can only use it if their memory's full?
Yeah, there's so many good combos with Breaking News already.
Right.
Better combos that just seems like a card you don't need to include.
Yes. Right.
Bad Times, I don't think, is ever a card that you want to include. It's sort of a trap because it seems like you're getting a really good effect for... I mean, a tag is a pretty heavy cost to pay. But when they make the decision... Like, if that was play only if the runner was tagged Trash 2 Programs,
right.
That's wonderful. Like,
right.
Always play that card. but when they get to make the decision, that is when you need to be able to assess the card correctly and be like, oh, wait... They get to mitigate the downside of it. So
it's garbage.
Garbage. Tag right. City.
Next combo, Zealous Judge, res only if the runner's tagged. Click, and one credit, give the runner a tag.
Okay.
Plus, Mr. Stone, asset, whenever you give the runner a tag, deal one meat damage. I call this the 1,000 bullets combo, right? Because if you have both of them rezzed, you spend your turn, click, 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 give the runner 3 tags and deal 3 meat damage. So they're either going to clear the tags or draw up, but they can't do both, right? Yeah.
Now, back in my day, this was restructured data pool plus private security force. That's what
right, so it's the modern version of that.
So Mr. Stone, what faction is Mr. Stone?
So those are both Wayland cards.
Okay.
They sound both like Wayland cards.
They both have a trash cost of 2. So if the runner can get in, they'll trash him.
Yep. And you do require a lot of servers, but...
Maybe out of, like, Gagarin?
Okay.
Do it in Gagarin. All right.
I like what we're building here.
Yeah.
Tags in Gagarin are a little bit rough.
Tags in Wayland are a little bit rough.
Tags in Sync are rough. We should put this combo in the sink.
All influence.
Yes. So that's where all Wayland cards go, right? Is right. NBN. So you don't play Wayland cards out of Wayland.
NBN is the best Wayland faction.
It's fantastic. in Wayland, probably Hack City.
In NBN, probably Deese.
Probably Deese.
I think it's Deese all the time. Okay, here's another combo for you. City Surveillance...
Okay.
It's an asset. Start of the runner's turn, they have to pay a credit or take a tag. Obviously, okay. They always want to pay the credit.
But it is res cost 5?
It's res cost 5.
Okay.
Trash cost 3. Yes. So a bad ratio. But what if you could protect it by putting it into controlling the message whenever the runner trashes, or the first time the runner trashes a card every turn, trace 4 to give him a tag.
Okay.
So there was a player here, Vince.
Yes.
I don't think he plays anymore. He used to play... It was the one where anytime you res a... Like a pop-up window. A advertisement.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Spark. Yes. So he played a Spark deck with that.
Yeah.
He would make you poor with the Spark ability because the runner would lose a credit every time he res an advertisement or played an advertisement.
Right.
And so you'd be down to 3 credits, and then he'd res that, and you just couldn't trash it, and then it just got piled on and on, and it was terrible.
Right. And even before that, I remember somebody else was running City Surveillance in an NBN deck, and it actually did work sometimes, and it was very oppressive.
Yeah.
Which I don't think we should be saying these words.
This is an oppressive combo. This is overpowered.
Yeah, ban City Surveillance. It is too cost effective.
I like City Surveillance. The res to trash cost is a bad ratio, but if you can protect it and controlling the message, which is really good at protecting assets, I think it's great. So I think it's Deese.
Okay, I will vote Deese as well.
Yeah, since I was punished by it, Deese.
Deese it is.
Because clearly losing to it and feeling bad about it means it's too good.
Right. Okay, so we have to discuss this next one because it's kind of the namesake of the podcast in a way. Well, we're talking about Shiloh City Grid.
Okay.
Whenever there's a successful run on the server or a successful trace during a run on the server, give the runner one tag.
Okay.
With Macrophage, which is a 3 to res, 7 strength code gate, that only has to do with viruses. So it's like trace 4, purge viruses. Trace 3, trash a virus. Trace 2, remove a virus from the game. Trace 1, end the run.
Okay.
So in a normal deck, you put in like 1, and it's good against medium or something like that. And then, that's it. But it's 7 strength for only 3 to res. Now, the runner would normally not care about these subroutines, but what if they did because it was Shiloh City Grid and you can give them like 3 or 4 tags just by hitting that one piece of ice?
That's so stupid. I love it.
Yes. That is actually like... Because the thing is that It's that beautiful moment in Netrunner when you pull this off and you res the Shiloh City Guard and they're like, oh, Macrophage, it's an okay card. So Shiloh City Guard, not a great card. And then you have to watch on each player you play as it dawns on them what they need to do to overcome your combo and inevitably still win the game.
Right.
But you just have that moment of your opponent realizing that you've done something
so
nasty.
So they can look at it and be like, well, I'm going to pay through the Trace 1 and the run anyway. So I could spend no credits and get 3 tags by encountering this ice, or I can use my Gordian Blade to pay 9 to break this stupid Macrophage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is this starting to... Have you built this yet?
No.
Okay. Oh, wow. It needs to be built.
But I'm gonna. Okay.
I mean, so, it is a 2-card combo. It's tough to set up, get everything in the right server.
But Shiloh City Grid has a 6 trash cost.
So I'm going...
Right?
I'm going
the trash cost?
3.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that's reasonable. That's super reasonable.
That's pretty decent.
Six credits is worth it. Okay, actually, this one might be deece.
This one might be deece.
Double deece.
All right, here's another one. I'm going to bring it up because it's an HB. In my ID tonight that I played, Cider.
Okay. It
punishes them for spending clicks on a run.
Okay.
They can get around it by running last click.
Yes, but...
What if you put in a Prysec, an upgrade... If the runner accesses it, you pay 2, you give them a tag, and deal meat damage. They run last click, they can't clear the tag anymore, you spend your influence on Scorches, or closed accounts, or something, I don't know. Some kind of tag punishment. Prysec Insider, what do you think?
just resounding silence.
I mean, it's basically... It's taking up all of your influence and a bunch of your slots to do this thing.
That
threaten a kill, I guess.
Might work.
Right.
In a deck that otherwise doesn't want to kill you.
And no other ways to tag you.
Basically. I mean, maybe you run Snare?
Sherlock?
What if you spend 8 influence on freaking... Oh, there you go. Sherlock.
Yeah, sure, yeah, Sherlock.
Gotta have Sherlock. And then you spend like 6 influence on Snares and 8 influence on... Scorched Earth.
It's ugly. I'm still going to vote Hack City on this.
Yeah, that's Hack City.
Hack City. All right. What else is good on here? Let's switch over to the runner side for a second. Jezminder.
Okay.
Shaper ID. Ignore the first tag that you get every run.
Okay.
Combined with Citadel Sanctuary, at the end of your turn, initiate a trace of 1. If it's unsuccessful, you get to remove a tag. So, it doesn't seem immediately apparent, but okay. Jezminder loves Account Siphon, because she only gets 1 tag from that.
Okay.
Instead of both.
Okay.
So then Citadel Sanctuary could remove the tag at the end of her turn if you had Link. And you're a Shaper, so you can do Rabbit Hole to get 3 Link.
And you can also win the traces, usually, because you just Account Siphoned them.
Well, yes. Yes, you can.
So that also gives you an added edge to the trace.
Right. But because you're running Account Siphon, you can't run Security Nexus, which is debatably the better card that does stuff with your Link.
Okay.
Security Nexus lets you bypass, run a trace. If it's unsuccessful, you get to bypass a piece of ice.
Okay.
And that's a console.
Okay.
So I think Nexus, Jezminder, maybe could be a thing. But, like, is Citadel Sanctuary in that build good?
How much does Citadel Sanctuary cost to install?
I think it's 2. And it also says trash all cards from your grip and trash Citadel Sanctuary, avoid all meat damage. So it's an anti-bleed card as well.
Yeah, so that added benefit in there to...
It's kind of like a class creep in a way.
Yeah. Well, it's not... Well, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't seem great.
I think it's Hack. I think it's Hack City. All right, last runner one. Speaking of Jezminder, her console, Maya, lets you, when you make a successful run to R&D, you access the first card, or you access cards from R&D, you get to take a tag to bury one of those cards and put it at the bottom of R&D.
Okay.
Right? So it lets you cycle through extra cards if you make multiple runs on R&D. But you take a tag. So it's really powerful, but most of the time you're not running it outside of Jezminder because of the tag thing.
Or you're doing something dumb with New Angeles
City Hall.
City Hall.
But instead of New Angeles City Hall to avoid the tag, what if you used Qianju PT, the motorcycle from Order and Chaos?
Okay.
2 to install hardware. At the start of your turn, lose a click and then avoid the first tag that you would get until the end of, until the beginning of your next turn.
I do have to give you some points on this one, because normally whenever someone comes up with a combo with that motorcycle, it ends with, oh wait, that doesn't work. So this one actually, the combo is there. Like, it happens.
If you were relying on that, then I guess you'd probably include an adjusted chronotype, so you never lose that click, actually. You just get to remove one free tag every turn.
Yes, so it's a 3-card combo.
Well, yeah. Okay, so it's a 3-card combo.
Okay.
And you can use it in Shaper for 2 influence for the adjusted chronotype.
Yep. And you probably also want to put some other...
Maya's a good console. Yep.
And that motorcycle's just a bad card.
The motorcycle's not very good.
No.
Yeah, how about you just don't pay influence and play New Angeles City Hall?
Yeah, that's probably better.
Because it's 2 credits to avoid a tag.
Right.
And 2 credits is kind of equivalent to 1 click once your rig is set up.
Yeah, I mean, you might be running Magnum Opus.
Yeah.
Plus no influence. And I apologize for my ignorance, but this is sort of when I had stepped out of the game for a little bit. With Maya, do you have to say up front whether you're going to be getting rid of that card, or do you have, or is it like, oh, I really don't want to get rid of that
card? You
have
to choose as you access
it. As you access it. So at that point, it's
Maya's
like...
Maya's good.
Yeah, Maya's, again, really good.
Maya's great.
Yeah. I'll praise Maya.
I'll praise Maya.
If it's really that bad, you can just bury it anyway and then get rid of the tag with a click and 2 credits,
right.
And you have to weigh the opportunity cost there.
Right.
But sometimes it's worth it.
For my last one, Hunter plus sub boost. So Hunter, Corset Ice, cost 1, 4 strength sentry, 1 subroutine, trace 3, take a tag. Sub boost is a condition, so you play it on top of a res piece of ice, gives it end the run and barrier. So 2 card combo, you get a strength 4, 2 sub barrier, trace 3, take a tag, and end the run. It's also a sentry, so you can break it with 2 different kinds of breakers.
But it's that strength is the main thing.
But you only spent 1 credit. Those. 1 credit and 2 cards.
And I tell you, this meta where everyone is just playing sub boost all the time.
Yeah, I know, right?
I can never break anything. It's really rough, this meta that we're living in right now.
You know what else sub boost is good with? Macrophage. Because then it's a 7 strength and the run.
And then with Shiloh City Grid.
Right, give him 3 tags. So this is like a mini version.
We've already built the deck, basically.
this wasn't a combo discussion. This is a deck.
This is making news, Glacier. That's what this is.
All right.
No, but I think that's hack. I think it's too many cards for not enough return.
No, yep, that is. Sub boost, just not.
Otherwise,
we wouldn't be here.
Guys, thank you for playing Dece or Hack City.
I feel like we all lost.
in a little bit.
Try out those decks and lose.
Watch out, casual lobby of Jinteki.net. You're in for a treat. Well, guys, that's our show. Thank you so much for joining me, Matt.
Thanks for having me, Graham.
And David.
And thank you as well.
And thanks to Fair Game for letting us record our podcast here. Guys, you can shoot me a tweet at GrahamCrackerGo. You can find us twice a month at podomatic.com/podcast/shipment from Shiloh. My username on all things Netrunner is PureFlight. Thanks again to Foundation for the amazing theme music. And thanks to you, our avid listener, for listening in. Join us next time on Shipment from Shiloh, and stay safe, New Angeles.
I toyed at the idea of just pretending I was British this entire podcast, and I thought that would be interesting, but...
probably also teensy bit racist.
Possibly. Ah, nah, that's fine.
Culturally insensitive person.
Culturally insensitive, definitely. Yes. Racist.
I would argue British accent during the entire American podcast. I think that's Hack City. I'm not going to lie. I don't think it's decent.
Yeah, but very, very, very Hack City.